that song, and it's a wonderful song. Thank you for that special tonight. We are going to continue in our series through the book of Proverbs. We'll be looking at specific characters, and we were in Proverbs 18 just a few moments ago in our scripture reading, and so we will go back to that passage, but we will be looking at various other texts as well. We were looking at, most recently, last Sunday, the quixotic fool, and we looked at some characteristics of this particular fool, as there are three Hebrew words translated fool in the book of Proverbs. And we see in Proverbs 18, we see that a man, verse number 1, through desire, a man having separated himself, seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom. So a man who desires wisdom with God's help, by God's grace, God will enable him to acquire wisdom. If he truly desires, and with a humble heart, the wisdom that God would give him. And I know that for any of us as parents or in places of leadership, I think that we've all probably prayed for wisdom, like we read in the book of James. There are times where we're just perplexed about what to do. And I know there have been times I've sat in my office or even in a conversation in my mind, I'm praying, Lord, help me to know what to say here, guide my tongue, give me wisdom here. And yet we'll see the exact opposite of that with a fool. In verse 2, we read, a fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. So as we often see in Hebrew poetry, we see comparison and contrast. And here's the contrast. Here's the fool, opposite of verse 1, he doesn't want to get counsel. He doesn't really truly want wisdom. He wants to look within. He wants to discover what is in the recesses of his heart and do his own thing. And are we not there in our society with all this identity and all this self-realization and the removal of all of the disciplines of life so that we can just express ourselves any way that we want? That is the essence of foolishness. Now, I'm just going to go quickly through this again for review. Everything coming up there? Okay, good. Appreciate Drew and all his help back there in the sound booth. But we've looked at these characteristics of the fool in general, and then we talked about the simple, and then we looked at this first word translated fool from the Hebrew in the book of Proverbs. And again, the characteristics of this quixotic fool: enjoys folly, likes folly, doesn't have patience or concentration for wisdom, is going to resist, as we just even read in chapter 18 and verse 2, that does not really desire wisdom and wants to run from it. And again, there are foolish people all around us, it seems like. And one of the characteristics here, again, is they run from authority. They have a characteristic of running from that which would be the most help, that would give them the best answer. They run from that which would help them the most. And we've met and we've been around people like that, and we have to catch ourselves when we find ourselves like that. And we have to realize, you know what, maybe I'm running from all of the people who are trying to help me, and I'm just not listening. And we've been around people who, and again, I know some of this is just characteristic of maybe immaturity and such, but it concerns me when a young person or even an adult is always trying to avoid authority. They're always sitting in the back of the bus. They're always sitting in the back row of the church. They're always trying to stay out from under the view of the authority. They're always hiding in the shadows, always trying to stay away from responsibility and accountability. When we are constantly running from the accountability measures that God has put in our life, we are, in a sense, we are acting like a fool. And a quixotic fool has no patience or concentration for wisdom. no reverence for truth, rejects the fear of the Lord, is even referred to, as we looked at last week, even could be considered a menace. They're just an aggravation, and they're quarrelsome, always looking for an argument, not really to learn. They just want to argue. And again, I mentioned, I think last week, this is what we're seeing too often sometimes on social media, the Twitter mob, so to speak. They're just on social media to argue and to fight and to stir up things. And too often, we see that kind of characteristic or that kind of character in our society and in culture. And may God help us to not be this kind of a fool. Now, the second fool that specifically the Hebrew word is translated fool in the book of Proverbs, and this is the willful fool. 19 times this specific term is translated fool. Now, if you look in the Hebrew, and I am not a Hebrew scholar, when I did my master's degree, I know this is cowardice, but there were some of the guys in the Preacher Boys class who went on for their seminary degree, and they went full bore, 2 years of Greek, 2 years of Hebrew at the graduate level, and call me a chicken, but I didn't do that. I avoided the Hebrew, and I had taken 2 years of Greek in undergraduate, and I honestly did not want to take another 2 years of Greek, so I chose a seminary degree that allowed me to avoid the Greek and the Hebrew. But I can use my Greek helps fairly well, but Hebrew, I'm at a loss. So I have to look at the commentaries, and I have to look at some of these linguistic scholars, and I have to kind of figure out my way through it and hopefully get somebody who can bring it down to layman's terms. And if you look at this word and you look at the transliteration, it literally looks like the word evil in our English language. The transliteration is basically translated E-V-I-L. And I think in some cases they'll add an E at the end. So this is an evil fool. This is, I think the actual pronunciation that you'll hear is the evil fool. And there's a, I don't know if evil is where we get our word evil from, this term. I don't think so. But the point is, there is a evil characteristic to this fool. This is even in cases beyond the quesile, as if that weren't bad enough. Look at the characteristics of this willful fool, this evil fool. We see in chapter 1 in verse 7 that they are not interested in the fear of the Lord at all. Proverbs 1 in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But fools do what? They despise wisdom and instruction. So now we have a fool that is despising wisdom and instruction. These are people that are really difficult to deal with. You may have them under you in your place of work. You may have them as students. You pray not in your home, right? But this is a new level of rebellion. There is a despising of wisdom and instruction. There's not the fear of the Lord, and they look down at wisdom, at truth, at wisdom and instruction. Chapter 10, in verse number 8, the wise in heart will receive commandments, but a prating or prating fool shall fall. This is the babbler, the fool that just wants to talk and argue and stir up and be difficult. This is that student, this is that athlete, this is that coworker who, when the manager, the boss, the coach, the teacher gives an instruction or they correct this particular fool, they always have a response. Usually it's smart aleck or sarcastic, or it's just downright disrespectful, and then they always have to get the last word. Have you ever been around somebody like that? You ever worked with someone or had a student? Unfortunately, in my dealing with students through the years, I've met a few of these that they always have to have it in the last word. And as they turn, as they bristle with the instructions and maybe the discipline, even as they're walking away, they're mumbling under their breath. Now, around our house, we try our best not to tolerate the mumbling. The getting in the last word. We really try hard, strive hard. I mean, there are times where we're just like, zip it, done. And this is the characteristic of a willful or evil fool. They have to get in the last word. They have to, in some way, shape, or form, make the authority look bad. Look like they don't know what they're doing. This is a particularly rebellious type of fool. And unfortunately, are we not seeing this, again, too much in our society, in our culture today? Not to pick on Dan, but you probably see some of these that you have to address in the courtroom or deal with. Looking around, I'm sure, Dan, in classrooms, you've had to deal with some of them. Trying to think through, Kim, I would imagine you probably had some workers, and I'm sure in your line of work, you've had to deal with some, okay? And there's probably others. Denny, you probably had some that you dealt with through the years as well, and in various places. They're difficult, aren't they? And there's a burden for them as a believer to see their heart, their stubbornness broken, but they're really difficult to deal with because they just always want the last word. They always want to show you up and make you look bad or make the teacher look bad. And it's tough. And for me, when dealing with them and then their parents, what I found particularly difficult, they didn't stay long in our school if the parents put up with that. If they got dealt with at school and the parents tolerated it or didn't deal with it, then that student didn't last long at our school. But Proverbs 12 and verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. Here again is that characteristic. They are always right in their own eyes. So again, there's that authority that is disgraced, disrespected. They don't know enough. I know more. I'm going to get in the last word. I'm going to make the authority look bad because I'm right in my own eyes. That's this evil fool or willful fool. Proverbs 15 and verse 5. A fool despiseth his father's instruction. And that gets down to the home. And that's where it really hurts, is when a child has this kind of foolish spirit and attitude, and they are despising now the very parents that God gave them. That's a particularly grievous characteristic of the willful or evil fool. What about this fool? Well, his mouth gives him away. It is a characteristic of this fool, Proverbs 17 and verse 28, even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise, and he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. So the word fool there in verse 28 is this willful, evil fool. So this person is known for their language, their disrespect, their disdain for instruction, discipline, correction, so that when they are quiet, when they are quiet, when they don't say anything, it's as if, what's going on? Even an evil, a willful fool, is considered wise when he holds his tongue, which is rare. Which is, and again, it's showing contrast. It's that Hebrew poetic device showing contrast and teaching us about how we need to control our tongues. So it's just, again, it's a teaching tool, teaching mechanism in the way that it's worded there in Proverbs. Proverbs 24 and verse 7, wisdom is too high for a fool. He openeth not his mouth in the gate. Now, what is the gate? What is the gate representative of in the Bible often or in the Old Testament? It's the place of authority. It's the place of where decisions are made. It's the place where the leaders of the city would come and they would meet. So notice what we read here. Wisdom is too high for a fool. He openeth not his mouth in the gate. Okay? So we could look at this in a couple of different ways. We could look at it as the fool doesn't speak in those places of leadership because they are so foolish in their behavior, they don't ever get to that level of leadership. They forfeit the privileges of leadership because they don't seek after wisdom. But then there's another angle that we can look at this verse. If a fool is in a place of leadership, how bad it must be for that city. If a fool doesn't belong, if this kind of fool does not belong in the gate, in the place of leadership of the city, okay, they don't deserve it. They don't earn it. They don't belong there. Then how bad is it for a society, for a city, for a country when there is an evil fool talking in the gate? You get what I'm saying here? It's a scary thought, isn't it, to think when an evil, a willful fool who doesn't belong in leadership is there. It's a symptom of a real problem in that society. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse number 14. Proverbs 10 and verse 14. Wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. This fool destroys his or her life by their mouth. Their mouth reveals their heart, and their mouth leads them down a path of destruction. They're speaking the wrong things in the wrong places. Again, they're against authority. They're speaking against authority. They're speaking against the leaders in their life. They're speaking against those who are giving them wisdom. They are resisting, 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 resisting. And their mouth, with the words they say, the things that they post, I'm not here on one side or the other when it comes to John Gruden and all that's gone down in the news this week. But just an example that's kind of front and center right now, I'm not saying that I agree with cancel culture. I think cancel culture is a real problem. I'm not saying that John Gruden deserves everything that he got for old emails that he wrote. My point isn't that. It's just that, did he not type some vulgar things? Did he not, for the NFL and for its standards? Okay, there's a lot of people who should come down. If you think about all that goes on in the NFL and some of the things that go on behind the scenes and locker rooms and all that. But the fact that he wrote and he typed and said some of the things that he did, they ended up costing him. And right or wrong and where all that should have landed, it's not for me to judge. But it goes to show you how our language, how we type, what we post, how we write. As a believer, we should be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. So it's wrong for us to use the vulgarities. It's wrong for us to use the terminology of the world, even when we might be right. Even when our position is right, our disposition should be right as well. There should be a right spirit. Even if we are right on the issue, there should be a grace about our life, not a caustic, vulgar, flame-throwing, venomous kind of language and spirit and attitude. We can be strong in the Lord and the power of His might without being a brute, without acting like an evil fool in our language, in our choice of words. I don't know how many times, and I thank God by His grace, I can't say I've ever written a venomous email to a parent. But there have been times where I have typed an email or a letter or a text message, and I have shown it to my wife, or I took it down the hall to another pastoral staff member or a person that I knew and I trusted, and I said, take a look at this and tell me if you think I should send this way or if I should clean it up and say it differently. And there have been times where I've had to go back and make corrections, and there have been times where I typed it and I left it. I walked away and I prayed and I thought and I slept maybe on it, and the next morning I got up, walked into my office, and then I looked at it some more, thought through it again, added and edited, hit delete. Or I went ahead and I sent it, but I changed some things. Because I wanted to say it the right way. I didn't want to be foolish in the way I said it. And I think we've all been there. And we got to be careful in how we say things. The evil fool doesn't care. Bring them down. Cancel them. Annihilate them. If you have to drop a nuclear bomb on an ant, go for it. You know, that's the way their mentality is. You destroy your enemy. And that is too much a part of the culture today. It just goes to show where we're at in the evil, the willful foolishness. Morally insolent, mocks sin and doesn't care. Proverbs 14 and verse 9, fools make a mock at sin. It's a sad day when this kind of foolish attitude permeates the young people or the population, the culture. This willful fool literally sees sin as no big deal. As a matter of fact, we'll read elsewhere that it's a sport to a fool to commit sin, to commit folly. It's fun and games, okay? Grand Theft Auto, I don't know what number they're on, 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't know. But it is one of the top-selling video games of all time. I think it's second next to Minecraft. And Grand Theft Auto is vulgar. It is awful. I can't even explain. I can't even, some of the little bit, some of the things that I've read. That video game allows young people to vicariously participate in criminal activity and other violent debauchery. That is a way for young people, for even grown adults, to act out their willful foolishness, to mock at sin, and to sport themselves in sin. That's just one example. Grand Theft Auto is known for its violence and its immorality and its debauchery. And yet it's the number two selling game of all time, worldwide, from what I read or heard not that long ago. That's foolishness. That's willful foolishness. This is what really hits home. This is what's really convicting. Proverbs 22 and verse 15. This puts us as parents on our knees. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. God, through his inspired word, uses this evil, willful fool to describe the default position of a child's heart. That's convicting. As a parent, that makes me all the more want to lead my children in the ways of the Lord. It scares me and it motivates me, because a child left to himself or to herself will be this kind of a fool. I listened to a preacher one time say, it's not what you do to your child that turns them into a rebellious person. It's what you don't do to a child. And I appreciated that sermon by that preacher, because he went through and he listed, you don't spank them or have the proper discipline in your home. You don't correct them. And he had a long list of things. You don't do those things, and the default position of our child's heart will come out. That sin nature and all of its depravity will manifest itself. That's why we have to bring the discipline, the biblical correction, the biblical principles. We bring them to church. We put them underneath the sound of God's word. We put them around godly people, and on and on and on we could go. Because we want their heart to be moved away from its default position and turn to God, turn in faith to the Lord. And if we don't implement what God's word says, then they will go their own way. They will do their own thing. They will walk in the way of the evil, the willful fool. Must be dealt with early. In other words, again, using the parenting example, the child needs that training from an early age. And then when a person becomes an evil, willful fool, they're very, very difficult to eradicate. Though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. Agrarian society, a bull, what I understand from the biblical analogy, I'm not a farmer, but the old type of farming, you would have the grain in the bowl, and you'd have to crush it in order to make the flour, something along those lines. That's what you have to do to an evil fool, for them to respond. When a person gets to that point, God, in his grace and his mercy, will have to bring a judgment. Smash them down, so to speak. Grind them like grain being turned into flour. And that's what it will take. They eventually have to be removed if they won't change. Now, God can work. God can break that hard heart. But they are particularly difficult to bring to repentance. And God in his mercy will sometimes break that heart of stone, that evil fool's heart. But we see very few cases where they will respond to the truth, and they have to be brought into judgment. That's the willful fool. And then I think we have just enough time to look at the third word for fool. And I'm sorry, these are not the prettiest pictures, but I hope it helps us recognize these characteristics that we can help and we can witness and we can be a positive influence and we can help people before they turn this way. Or it helps us recognize it in society so we can know, hopefully, how to respond in a biblical way. The third fool, the third word translated fool in the book of Proverbs is only used three times, and this is the Nabal fool. And what do we think of when we think of Nabal? We think of the stubborn husband of, I believe it was Abigail, and he was stubborn when his wife came to him and said, hey, let's help David out. David helped our family and our sheep and our herdsmen, and David came hoping to get some assistance as he's running from Saul, and Nabal refused. Nabal was stubborn, and then God smote him, and he ended up dying. And so there's that Old Testament picture, and it's the same name, and it's the word that is used in, again, in the Hebrew language and translated fool in the book of Proverbs, only used three times. And he is known for his rudeness. Proverbs 17 and verse number 7. Excellent speech becometh not a fool, much less do lying lips a prince. Lying. The opposite of excellent speech. The contrast there. Okay? A Nabal fool is so rude that a Nabal fool will lie to your face repeatedly. And they will lie after lie after lie. They are known for their deception. You ever been around people like that? You can't believe a word out of their mouth? How do you know when this person is lying? Their lips are moving. You've heard that before. They cannot be trusted with any information. They cannot be trusted to do much of anything without high accountability. When you talk to them, you deal with them, you're constantly in your mind saying, okay, what can I believe? Their stories are changing. They're deceptive. There is a deception about their life, their speech, their behavior. It just seems like there's just a lie to their life. That's that stubbornness. As a matter of fact, I think it's in Proverbs 25. I should have looked it up, but I believe it's Proverbs 25 that speaks to the fact that a person who is a liar is actually showing their hatred for the person that they are lying to. In other words, lying is a form of hatred toward the person that you are lying to. So a person who is a Nabal fool is demonstrating a hatred for that relationship, a hatred for that person. It's a particularly grievous form of rebellion. And these people are difficult to deal with because they're so hard to trust. There's so much deception. There's such a pattern. And again, I use myself as an example of when I lied. I remember I was in first grade, and I was walking down the hall. My mom worked in the library, and I was walking down the hall as a little kid. I was waiting for my mom to get off work, and I walked down the hallway, and I found something outside of a classroom. My mom was working at the library at Pensacola Christian Academy, and I was this little first grader waiting for her to get done, and I walked down the hallway, and I found something outside of a classroom. I picked it up, I brought it back to the library and showed it to my mom. My mom told me what to do with it. I took that and I put it in my pocket. And then when my mom was getting ready to leave work, she asked me about this particular item that I had asked her about and what to do with it. And she asked me if I took care of it, if I did what I was told. And I said, yeah, Mom, I took care of it. Well, sure enough, I get home, and what happens? My mom finds this toy. I can't remember what it was. She found it. And she said, she looked right at me, and she said, I told you what to do with this. You lied to me, and you stole it. And I got royally spanked. I mean, not only did I have to return that, and I had to take it back to the teacher, and I had to confess my sin, but my dad let me have it. And there were times where I got spanked. Some of the biggest spankings I got, to this day, the biggest spanking in my life that I can remember was because I lied, point blank lied to my dad. And I'm so thankful. I know it sounds strange, but I am so thankful for those whippings. Because my mom and dad taught me to tell the truth. I mean, I remember my dad walking in and taking his belt off that moment after I had lied. I'm thankful. I mean, it was not very thankful at the time. I wasn't very thankful at the moment. But I look back now and I'm so thankful that my parents taught me to tell the truth. And there's been times where since then that I have not told the truth. And there has been conviction. There has been even thoughts of what happened when I was a little kid. Those have come to my mind as I knew I had not told the truth. And I'm thankful for having parents who dealt with that. And that's why I think lying has to be, deception has to be rooted out at such a young age and has to be dealt with, because it will set a pattern that will lead to Nabal foolishness. It's particularly hard on the conscience, and it can become a pattern of life that can ruin and lead to destruction. Proverbs 30 and verse 32, if thou hast done foolishly in lifting up thyself, or if thou hast thought evil, lay thine hand upon thy mouth. Surely the churning of milk bringeth forth butter, and the wringing of the nose bringeth forth blood, so the forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife. In other words, this Nabal foolishness, it has to be dealt with severely. It is a particular stubbornness and rudeness that needs severe correction. And then Proverbs 14 and verse 1, and then we'll be done tonight in dealing with this particular character, the fool. We'll move on to a couple other characters next week, Lord willing. Proverbs 14 and verse 1, every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. The contrast again, the Hebrew poetry, and then we're about out of time here. But the contrast, what does the Nabal fool woman do? What would be the opposite? If a wise woman builds her house, the foolish pulls it down with her hands. Okay, so ladies, I'm not trying to be chauvinistic here, but when a woman is undermining her husband, and again, I Love Lucy is a fun show. I know it's humor and it's comedy, and I'm not trying to sound all critical of the old black and white I Love Lucy. But if we watch an I Love Lucy, what is she doing? She's constantly manipulating and undermining and working behind her husband's back, right? And there's fun and there's folly in it, and we get the lightheartedness of it. But a pattern of that kind of manipulation, the pattern of that kind of undermining, is a woman pulling down her home. It's this Nabal foolishness. A woman who, again, is murdering, allowing her preborn child to be murdered. We have to have a burden for these ladies who are doing this. Many of them are under pressure. But it is a pulling down of her home when she's allowing. I know there's pressure and there's all kinds of circumstances, but abortion is murder. And when a woman allows that murder to take place, she's pulling down her home. When a mother doesn't love her children like she should, she ignores them, she disrespects them, she mistreats them, she talks down to them, they are passed off to babysitters all the time and left to fend for themselves. And I've known people, and I give credit to single mothers who have to work hard. They're courageous people. But I know a single mom from years ago, and she dropped her child off every place she could. She never wanted her child to be around. She's pulling her home down with her hands. There's a Nabal type of foolishness. There's in the New Testament, I believe it's in the passage in 1 Timothy, where it talks about unnatural affections. When a mother doesn't want children and doesn't want, when a woman who's uniquely made, created by God to have, to nurture children, when she doesn't want them and doesn't want them around or doesn't want her child born, there's an unnatural affection there, isn't there? There's a trend in our culture right now. It's a real serious... We do realize we are below the ability to replace ourselves, our population. We're at like 1.6 now. Our replacement rate is below what we can actually... I think you have to have a 2.2 birth rate to actually have a society that's replacing itself. I think we're at 1.6 or something according to 2018 or 2019 statistics. And there's different reasons for that, but one of them now is that there are actually people who tell young ladies that being a mom is basically being a handmaid to your husband, or you're gonna be a slave to your husband if you have a child, if you are a homemaker and you make your home a priority. And so there's this movement now among single women and married women and women entering into marriage to not even have children. They make a covenant before they enter into marriage, or unfortunately with all the illegitimate pregnancies now, there's the abortion industry and all that that's just moving against the desire, the natural desire for a woman to have and to bear children. And it's hurting our society. And there's other things, other factors. And again, I'm not trying to sound chauvinistic here, but I'm saying that a Nabal fool, in a sense of Proverbs 14 and verse 1, where a woman is living out the Nabal foolishness, she's pulling her home down with her hands. And there's various ways that that can be done. It can be on the men's side as well. The arrogance, the obnoxiousness, the authoritarian leadership, the lack of servant leadership in the home. We can talk about a man pulling down his home with his lack of leadership and his lack of humility and service for his wife and all that. But just something that we need to keep in mind there when we think about the Nabal fool. I hope that this has been a help. I don't want to be overly negative. I hope that it helps us, though, in recognizing our needs, the needs of others around us, and it helps us in preventing this kind of thinking that can lead us into sin and cause us to make poor choices. And may God keep us humble and keep us teachable, and that we don't have this kind of foolish mindset in any way, shape, or form. Let's bow for prayer, and then we'll be led into closing song. Let's pray.